All right, welcome aboard. It's the Dennis Stuckey Show here on WPHM, I believe. Yep, there it is. For a second there, I wasn't quite sure. You know, they're always in the studio with the new board, messing with the volumes and things, and I'm never quite sure if it's working just right. But I'm here, and we've got Mike Emmerich on the line as well, who's calling from Little Caesars Arena. Not really to work, Doc. You just wanted to finally see a hockey game because it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, since the game six between Washington and Vegas out in 100-degree Las Vegas. It's a little different down here in Detroit, and it's good to be inside an arena again and watch a Zamboni go back and forth. Dennis, you'll appreciate this. You probably noticed it in watching the game last night. The NHL is now selling advertising on the ice in the corners outside the trapezoids. And so Tyson Foods, MGM Grand, Pure Michigan, which does sponsor the trivia quiz in the morning, and Chevrolet have bought the four corners of the Little Caesars Arena ice here for the season. And according to the mandate of the NHL, they have done a study and have discovered that those areas will have 20% visibility in the telecast of a hockey game. And so I guess they can probably get a pretty good price for that. So that's something new. You and I, well, you don't, but I remember when there was no board advertising, let alone anything allowed on the ice. But now we have sold the corners. Before it was the center ice, now we've sold the corners. So that will be something, if the fans listening have not noticed it yet, they can watch for that.
I remember the days of white boards. I remember the days of no helmets.
You're not that old.
I remember Billy Barber to Rick McLeish and hair flying everywhere.
Gee, because the helmet rule was 1979, and anybody coming in after that had to wear a helmet. I didn't realize you went back that far.
Oh yeah,
there were a few guys that held on. I think Craig McTavish was the last one in the mid 90s with St. Louis. I think he was the last guy to. Last guy, or mid-80s maybe it was, to play with without a helmet. But anyway, yeah, we're looking forward to seeing some action here tonight. The lineup has 24 players listed for Chicago and 22 for Detroit. And included in the Blackhawks are Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. Now, 24 means you have to scratch 4 to come down to a legal 20. And this is a team that's going on to play in Ottawa tomorrow night. So whether we'll actually see one or two of those guys in the lineup for Chicago tonight or whether the fans in Ottawa will see it, I don't know. But Philip Zadina is listed as one of the Red Wings and Nyquist and Thomas Vanek and Luke Glendening and some other people. They'll have to scratch too. Jake Chelios is listed tonight for Detroit too. But they will make a couple of changes late. And I didn't get down to the morning skate today, or maybe I would have found out who out of the 22 is really going to play. But it's just fun to be inside a rink again after a summer of not being inside one, and you're going to be inside rinks soon enough after being at Gridirons on Friday night.
Yeah, that's actually coming fast. I had was just talking to Joe Pace Jr. yesterday to set up our schedule so they'll remember to come in on Wednesdays now starting next month because they get going in November, of course. But they're starting to...
Is his suspension over?
His suspension is over.
He's always suspended that guy.
It's hard to follow, isn't it?
Oh, can he be suspended as a coach now? I guess he can.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Why not?
Oh, of course.
Why not? Yeah. And actually, when he signed one of the other veteran players, Matt Graham, they made sure to put in the release that Matt would be the assistant coach in the event that one was needed.
In the event, okay. Yeah, the season, I believe I heard you say November 3 is the first home game?
November the 9th is the first home game.
Okay.
The first weekend in November, they're on the road. In fact, the first two weekends, they're on the road, so they play four away before they play their first home game. But the first home game is Elmira, which should be interesting. Because that is they're owned by Robbie Nichols. I don't know that Robbie will travel with the team, but he was always colorful, so I imagine that his team will be colorful as well.
Yeah, that goes back to a lot of Border Cats games with Flint, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, great old times.
So
great old times.
Look, I'm actually looking forward to it because it feels like for the first time to me, Doc, and I know it's only six teams, so it's still a small league, but it just feels like it's six healthy teams that are going to make it the whole season and you don't have to worry about stuff like that. And it also sounds to me like they all want to compete, so they all want to put the right kind of player out onto the ice and make the game worthwhile for fans to come to.
I remember you used to tell me about Dayton 2 years ago, I believe it was, and how they only had so many players that were there. And then last year there was that sad team from Ontario province that came in and were short on players and would be behind by six or seven goals early. And you wind up feeling sorry for players and especially players that have to be on teams that are so bad that you realize that it's going to be nothing but losing all year. But that's the best sign of all, that it looks like all six are going to compete and are committed to be that way. And you do have some bus travel still, but that's the nature of hockey and the thing that people around Port Huron have known about when those buses rolled up from other teams. They always enjoyed greeting the Flint and Toledo teams outside, as I recall. It would roll up right down there near the tower, near the McMorran Tower, and occasionally there'd be people out there to say hello.
Good times, huh?
They were. Yeah, they sure were. Sure glad we still have the team going there, and I'm glad that Mr. Saskin has decided to keep it going like he has. And look, the prospects are certainly good.
Well, I mean, it's hard to improve, though, from where they were last year, other than, I guess, if you won the championship this time around. But to win as many games as they did last year, there's no way you can duplicate that. You can't have 38-game stretches where you simply don't lose games.
Yeah, I set a whole bunch of records, didn't they?
Yeah. That's
Well, it'll be fun to go out there and just walk through the turnstiles, get those fries. Because the McMorran fries are still great. Get the fries, sit up there, and watch them play. It's all a part of an event that has been a part of Port Huron history back to 62 and almost continuously during that time. So that's what makes for fun.
When the Flyers did their long streak, Doc, were you working in Philly at that time?
No, I was with their farm team in Portland, Maine. It was in 79-80. Pat Quinn was the coach, and they went 35 games, 10 of which were ties because we had ties back then. And so it was, I don't know, what was it, 2.5 months?
Yeah.
Almost without a defeat. And I remember we got they were so excited about it that they published a four-color magazine that documented each and every game. And they gave it away to fans. They didn't sell it. They gave it away. It was like a yearbook in the middle of the year, documenting all 35 games. It was a pretty impressive run, and later on that year they went to the Stanley Cup Final against the Islanders and lost in six, and that turned out to be the Islanders' first of four. And it's hard to imagine, but the Flyers, since 1975, have not won a championship. So that was one of the many times that they've gotten to the final and come close, but have never won since. I'm sure a lot of people in Detroit are extremely sad about that.
That was that's to date is probably still my favorite Stanley Cup, was beating the Flyers.
I'll bet it was. Yeah, 97.
Yeah.
And it was
not only because it ended the long drought without one, but it was just the whole Lindros Legion of Doom thing. I just like beating those guys.
Yes, Eric came in so heralded, and he was the one Flyer that scored late in that fourth game. He was the only guy that got a goal, and it was very late, and it meant nothing by that time. But yeah, they each time they think this is the team that's going to do it, and they've gone so many times and have not done it. And I remember what a wonderful celebration it was that night. I was just down there as a fan. I had a press pass, so I was down below the stands watching on television. But it was such a great celebration. I recall that the inbound lanes of all of the expressways were shut because they didn't want people coming into town to celebrate. They only wanted people that were downtown already to. And the celebration went on for a long time that night. But it was all cordial, and it was friendly, and, you know, not to document sad times, but a couple of the Pistons celebrations had turned pretty surly in prior years. And so this was one step that they had taken in advance, that if the Red Wings were able to win, that it was going to be a wonderful, peaceful celebration, which it turned out to be. But I think, too, one of the memories I have of that was that Ken Cal was in his second year of doing the Red Wings on radio. And he had taken over for Bruce Martin, who had been the Red Wings announcer since the 60s. And poor Bruce had been there all those years, some of which were good and some of which were Harkness darkness. And just and then in 95 against the Devils, they finally got to the finals and got waxed four straight. And that was Bruce's last year. So he invited Bruce back to share the microphone and do the second period of the fourth game. And lo and behold, Bruce got to call Darren McCarty's goal on Ron Hextall that turned out to be the game winner. And God bless Ken for thinking of Bruce, and Bruce got a chance to call a cup-winning goal, the only time he got a chance to do that in his whole career, and it was after he had retired. What a thoughtful thing for one announcer to do for another.
Well, you know, and when I listen to Ken, I sometimes hear Bruce. When I listen to myself, yes. I sometimes hear Bruce.
Yeah, you know, isn't that the truth? A lot of times you do resemble who you grow up listening to. And I think that's probably the case, yeah. Ken grew up around here in the Detroit area, and he tells a wonderful story about his last name is not Cal. It's a longer name. He grew up in, I believe, Hamtramck. He's of Polish descent. And he oftentimes is asked to MC the annual banquet that is the induction into the Polish Sports Hall of Fame. And one year, it wound up being one of his childhood heroes who was being inducted. Do you go back in wrestling long enough to remember Killer Kowalski?
Oh, I do remember the name.
Yeah, he was a very tall man, I think 6 feet five, 6 feet six. He was on the wrestling circuit nationwide, but very prominent in the Midwest here in the 1960s. So anyway, he was one of the men who was inducted that night, and Ken was the MC. And to this day, he still has a photograph in his office of this. But anyway, I don't want to go on too long if you've got commercials here. But so anyway, the ceremony's over, and he's standing around, Ken's standing around kind of on one leg and then on the other, because he'd like to speak to this hero of his that he watched on television as a kid, Killer Kowalski. And finally, the last of the autographs is given out, and he steps forward and says, "Mr. Kowalski, could I get a picture with you?" And he said, "You did a good job, kid. You did a great job there. We're going to do a picture. But when we do the picture, you got to sell it." He didn't know what that meant. And so what that meant was Killer was going to get Ken in a headlock. And Ken was supposed to act like he was in extreme pain. So Killer got him in the headlock, and he said, "Okay, young man, sell it." So the picture that Ken has in his office is of his eyes wide and his tongue sticking out and Killer gritting his teeth and putting this hold on. And I can imagine, as an iconic hero of a young man from Detroit, Killer Kowalski and yourself in a picture, especially this many years later, is quite fun. And Ken did the baseball a couple of nights ago.
I know.
Sensational doing the Tigers. I thought he was spectacular.
Now, I was glad Jim Price turned him down on the chance to go do color on a Wings game.
Well, that's, and they worked really well together, too, but that's part of two guys being professional, both Jim and Ken doing that.
And just, likable people, because all the broadcasting is signed. If you ever meet Ken Cal or Jim Price, they will just sit there and they'll have a conversation with you, and they'll talk about stuff. You don't even have to talk about the Wings or the Tigers with them.
My favorite trivia about Ken Cal, you've probably heard it before, he has at least 300 games in bowling. I don't know of any other announcer in hockey and maybe in any other sport that has rolled 300 games. Now, he may have more. The last I heard, it was three. He may have more. I don't know how much time he gets to bowl anymore. Let me know if this public address test in the background is getting to you or not. I'm not sure whether you're hearing it there, but they're doing the mic test here inside the arena.
I don't know if you caught it last night, but Ken Daniels on TV had just done a long introduction when the Wings changed goalies, and they brought in the goaltender from Finland, and then Eric Friday came on right behind after Ken had finished saying, we're going to call him this, and he called him a completely different name.
I heard, you know, I had both, I was watching the Pirates on television, and I had the radio broadcast of the Pittsburgh-Detroit hockey game on, and then I changed it over just to see what the rink looked like, because I had heard something about these corner ads, and it was right at the time that Mickey and Ken were discussing various reasons for pronouncing names differently. So I didn't know what the reason that the subject came up was, but you just now told me. So
yes.
Now I know why they were on that subject.
Yes, he wanted to be called Harry instead of Harry, and then after going through the long explanation of why we're calling him Harry Sateri, they came on the PA and announced him now in goal, Harry Sateri.
My. Well, we just learned today that one of the more prominent players in the league has informed us that it's not Tavares anymore, it's John Tavares. So we now have to shift gears. And, you know, the thing is, after a few years, you see 91 with an Islander uniform or with a Toronto uniform, and you immediately, it goes into your brain, Tavares, and now we have to change. But it's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the curse of being an announcer. People don't want to hear about our problems.
So, some of those guys want to do it on a weekly basis, too, some of the European players. It's Tomas this week, it's Tomas next week, it's something different the week after that. Until they score a couple of goals, then you can keep it the same for a while.
I know.
Not that we're superstitious.
It's going to be a fun year. It's going to be a fun year to look ahead to. You know, if I were to ask you and you were to ask me to pick the regular season champions of the four NHL divisions, and then you were to have people call in and pick the four winners, they could stand to be as right as I would be, because there's so much parity going on in the league, and I know that's a sick word. People get tired of hearing it. But you can make a case for a lot of teams winning regular season divisional championships, and then depending on how they do at the trade deadline, the same thing.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm going with Tampa Bay and Washington in the Eastern Conference as a regular season champions, but you could easily make a case for the big three in the Metropolitan are Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Washington. And over in the Atlantic side, it's Boston, Toronto, and Tampa, and I think Tampa will finish. I still think Tampa's got a championship in him somewhere, and whether Stevie Y will be there as an employee of the team at the time that they win it, I don't know. But when you get to the conference final 3 out of 4 years, you keep thinking, how are they not winning this thing?
Oh, I know.
They've only been to the final once. You just wonder. And out west, I mean, you could shake them up in a barrel and throw out the whole Pacific Division and make a case for all three teams in California and Edmonton and almost anybody except Arizona, and maybe they'll be better this year too. But the Central looks like it's Nashville and Winnipeg and then the rest. I was sort of surprised, but I guess when they size it up and they look at the overall talent and the age and everything else, the Hockey News had Chicago pick 7th in the Central.
Wow.
There are 7 teams in the Central Division.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yes, they had Chicago pick 7th. I didn't necessarily have them as a playoff team, but I didn't have them all the way at the bottom. But it's everybody has their own opinion at this time of year, and as I said, there could be people call in, or you might make your picks, and you would be far closer than I. Last year I had Chicago picked as first. They didn't make the playoffs. I did have Tampa right.
Well, the one that got me last year was obviously the guys in Vegas. I didn't have them finishing quite so high as they did.
I had Fort Wayne finishing higher than Vegas. And actually, the Comets had a pretty good year, but in a different league. Yeah, no, who would have thought that you could have pieced together a bunch of guys that were rejects from other teams despite the fact that they might have been good rejects, because the draft, the expansion draft, was pretty lenient, and it's going to be that way from Seattle whenever they wind up starting to do business, because they're going to want the same deal that Vegas got. But it's, you know, who would have thought? And the answer is no one. And it wound up becoming not only a great sports story, but sadly a great human interest story, because of the tragic circumstances of the shooting on the night of their last preseason game, and how the players gave blood and they became friends of the first responders and of the victims' families all year long. And then they put together such a wonderful season, and you have to say they upset Nashville, and you have to say they upset Winnipeg, because those were two great teams, and got to the final and came within two wins of getting the championship. It was just a magnificent story. No one would have thought of that. But either way, it was going to be a storybook finish in the final. Either Ovechkin was going to get his first championship, or the Vegas Golden Knights were going to write some wonderful history, and they did anyway.
Did we ever find Ovechkin? Is he back now?
He apparently is in town, and the young man knows how to celebrate. But
he earned it.
Coming. Yeah, and you know, the strange thing was, I think there was a total change in how people felt about Alex from the time that he first came in. He was this boisterous, go out of your way to hit somebody, perceived as kind of a me first kind of guy. Whether he was or not, it was how he was perceived. And then all of a sudden, he became perceived as this team first kind of guy last year. And 2 hours before the game six, Barry Trotz was out talking with us as we get a chance to speak with the coach. And I said, I remember you're telling a story early in the playoffs about you speaking with Alex over in Moscow last summer. Can you retell the story? And so, are we close to time here? I'm not sure.
Yeah, you go ahead. This will be our last little bit here.
Oh, okay. And he said, I went over for Alex's wedding. I didn't go to the reception because the coach doesn't need to be there while a bunch of young guys are celebrating the guy's wedding. But I waited until a couple days after, before he went on his honeymoon. We had dinner. And I said, Alex, here's how it is back in Washington. We've lost some players. We may lose more. We aren't going to be as talented as we were last year. The perception is you're an older player in a faster game, and it's partly your fault. And the question is, can you overachieve in terms of physical conditioning between now and the time that we start the season? If you can, you're going to lead us a long way. Now, aside from that, here is how I see your legacy. It's not in whether you win championships or trophies. There are kids all around the world that wear your red number 8 because they admire you. Why? Because you're so committed to playing this game, and you're so strong at playing it, and you have such skill that they admire you, and that's why they wear your number 8. Things like that are going to be your legacy. Not scoring championships, not Stanley Cups, not individual awards. And you already have that. So you don't need to worry about what your legacy is going to be. He came into camp, and he was ready to be a player and a team player. And as you'll recall, he had 4 goals in the first game and 3 in the second, and that's in October. And he seemed to us, it's easy to say in retrospect, but he seemed to us to be a different kind of player and a team guy more so. And he was blocking shots and just doing different things. Well, I'm glad it worked out for him because, like you said, Dennis, he deserved a championship and he got one. I don't know if he'll get 2 because it's so hard to go through the gauntlet and do anything twice in the NHL.
Amen. Amen to that. Hey, Doc, enjoy the game tonight.
Go Prowlers.
I will pass on the message that you are rooting for them.
Joe, I'm glad that he's not suspended yet.
and my mother-in-law, Becky, says thank you for the candles.
Oh, God bless her. Okay, take care.
All right. Bye-bye, Doc. All right, there's Mike Emmerich joining us from LCA today. And, of course, as I do anytime I get Doc on the show, we just went on and on and on. I'm way overdue for a break, so bear with me. I will be back at some point.